I pulled my 401k and I bought 300 gallons of rosé and made a prototype. I get asked this a lot from other entrepreneurs or people wanting to start businesses. What do I do and where do I start? And I guess my answer has always been the same, is put yourself in a position where the only way out is through.
My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Women in Tech. My name is Brian Nickerson. I'm guest hosting for Esprit Devora. I'm here today with a fabulous founder. She is innovating in the space of alcoholic beverages. I'm here with Alix Peabody, founder and CEO of Bev. Alix, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Hi, Brian. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. So how do you come to a podcast without drinks when on a like Friday afternoon?
I know that was shameful of me, to be honest with you. I was running around in meetings all day, so I have since handed them out for happy hours, and I can have some people deliver them later.
Amazing. No worries. So tell us about Bev.
Oh, where to even begin? Bev, we make a canned rosé as our first product, but really we consider ourselves much more of a media and lifestyle brand. We are a company that's founded on a few main things. Primarily, we believe that the world will have a lot more fun when people feel confident, happy, and are kind to one another. And so those are the things that we really, really care about as a company. And you can kind of tell when you walk into our office, we're just the type of people who are excited to see you because you exist and you're here and all of our parties are really welcoming and fun. And our brand sort of emulates that. It's just a really genuine team and genuine group of people. So that's Bev. And that's what we're trying to promote, is, you know, this happy relationship with fun, particularly for women.
Yeah. Amazing. So I heard, when we first met, I heard your story of how Bev started, and it was like, you know, for everyone out there who's wondering, like, can I make it happen? What does it take? I just felt like it was so inspirational. So, talk to us.
Sure. Yeah. So what went down? So, the Bev story is long and winding,
right? No,
oh no, zero, zero.
Just like everything lined up.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It was easy. No, it was really hard. Yeah. So I was living in San Francisco and I was an executive headhunter there, in the tech space. And mostly I was there because I wanted to, you know, meet people, and I knew I wanted to build something one day, but I wasn't sure what. I knew I wanted it to be around sort of women and what I like to call lighthearted feminism, you know, empowering women through without necessarily man-hating, and by really bringing people together. But I didn't know what. And one day I'm walking to work, and no one ever sees this coming when I tell them I have a rosé company, by the way. They're like, you must really like wine. I'm like, not quite. So, I mean, yes, but that's not how it came to be. So I'm walking to work and I just got really sick, like throwing up middle of the sidewalk, went to the hospital, found out that overshare, but important, I think, because also women should just know this happens.
Yeah.
I had an ovarian torsion in my right ovary, and it was going into organ failure, really toxic, and I had to be rushed into the ER literally that night. Mm. And so I was there, and I was young. I was like 23, maybe 24. And so the doctors were really trying to, you know, save my ovary and my eggs. I'm the eldest of five kids, had always wanted kids in the future, stuff like that. So long story short, or long story medium, I guess, I ended up in this situation where I had to freeze eggs because I lost my right ovary and had to come up with like $20,000 to $50,000 to do it in a really short period of time. And because it's not covered by insurance, even in a situation like mine, which is ludicrous, in my opinion. So, so instead of, you know, freaking out, I decided to throw a party and invite a bunch of my friends and invite a bunch of tech bros really in the Silicon Valley area and charge people for tickets to raise money. So I asked my aunt and uncle who happened to live in wine country with a pool and a beautiful view and all that stuff, and asked them if I could use their place. Got my friends who worked at Google to get a Google bus on the cheap for the weekend and charge tickets to people to come what was called the Sonoma Dager parties. So that's kind of how I raised money. But at all of these parties, first of all, they were day parties. So everyone was drinking rosé and that was kind of a common thing. Mm-hmm. And second of all, we had this issue of glass breaking by the pool. And if glass badness and really if glass bad. Breaks by the pool, it's A, it's really annoying. It's dangerous, obviously. But B, it's really expensive because you have to drain the whole pool and, you know, take all the glass out.
It's like what comes to mind is like that's pretty bad. And also like the Caddyshack scene, right?
Where pretty much. And
the whole party.
You just
kinda,
got like a bunch of it was a little people as what is that phrase? People like to go a little Gatsby at these at these parties. So they were successful in that way, but they were also interesting in that, you know, we realized that this was an issue of some sorts, not an issue per se, but an annoyance that we had. So that was kind of the start, but I didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like, oh, now it's time to make a canned rosé. Like not at all. It was just kind of a joke of between me and my aunt and my cousins, but something that didn't really come up until much later. So at that point, I guess I was having a little bit of a crisis. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. I was trying to sort of redefine what it means to be a woman and, what does it mean if I can't have kids? Mm-hmm. And, how do I still sort of enjoy myself, enjoy my life if this thing that I always thought was something I could have, just I wasn't sure I could have anymore. And so at that point, I started really thinking more and more about, what that meant for me, really. Yeah. I guess it was a weird time. And I was young. I was like 24 or so. So at that point, I thought maybe I want to build a media company. Maybe I want to be in entertainment. Maybe I want to write a show about, women like me who are just trying to figure it out, really. Mm-hmm. But in a happier way. Mm-hmm. Even when things are tough. And I moved to LA to go to USC for screenwriting, of all things. and I liked it a lot, but it was frustrating. And it kind of left me writing in that way left me a little bit wandering, because it's a lot of time in your own head, I found. Mm. I have so much respect for writers. And it was tough. And I kind of found myself in this position where I was just, I was just trying to figure it out and I didn't mm-hmm. really know which way to turn. And at that point, I started to really think about different things I could do that would push forward what it is I wanted to build. And it wasn't so much a company I wanted to build as it was a message I wanted to relay, if that makes sense. Uh-huh. Yeah. And sort of from there, from that thought of building a media company, whatever, I was thinking back on all of the ways I'd ended up where I was and came up with this almost Red Bull-like concept where I was like, well, what if I built, a brand that really stood for something with a product that fueled the brand and a product that I could actually sell that the market wants. And as I started looking more and more at alcohol as a sector and, wine and that kind of stuff, I realized that there is, with the exception of Skinny Girl Margarita, which I don't think would do great in this climate, there's nothing that's branded and marketed for women in a really healthy and happy way. I think women have a complicated relationship with fun. So that's a little long-winded, but that's my story.
I think that your background in kind of storytelling and your desire to storytell is really like there's so much depth to your company that's beyond just Bev, which is not to say that it's just Bev, right? But like that that notion of the complication that women can have with fun.
Yeah,
and
for
so
sure.
How do we trans? How do you? I think there's a part you're like, how do you transform that?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you embody that? And how do you celebrate that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the Red Bull side, right? Of
yeah.
the media side of what
yeah.
you're doing.
Well, I think you know when you think about women and their relationship with fun in general, and a lot of what's been happening in the media and in this modern day in general, fun is almost dangerous for women in a way, or has become so. You know, it's you're in mm-hmm. the frat basement, you're at the bar, you're at the club, you're putting yourself in a position where you could be a victim. Or I've been in every male-dominated industry at this point. I started in finance, I worked at a hedge fund, then I was in tech, then I was briefly in entertainment, and as if it couldn't get any worse, now I'm in alcohol. So really, really every male-dominated industry.
Maybe the NFL.
Yeah, that's next. That's
next.
What's next, yeah. For sure. But you know, I really have been. And every, you know, every place I sort of noticed the same thing over and over again, which was that in one part of my life, it was almost embarrassing to be in that other part of my life, right? So if I was in a boardroom or in a meeting with, you know, other entrepreneurs or whatever, I didn't necessarily want people to know that I loved going to Burning Man or that, you know, I like to party on a Friday or that I'm throwing ragers on the weekends to freeze mm-hmm. eggs. Hilarious. But, and, you know, and when I was out in New York, this literally happened to me once. I was at a bar and someone asked where I worked and I mentioned the name of the hedge fund I worked at. And a guy literally looks at me and goes, "Oh, so you're an admin." And I was like, "No, and you're not as smart as our admins," but whatever, moving on. But, you know, but that I just found that any place I was, it made it kind of that other part of my life was odd, if that yeah. makes any sense. And, I found with a lot of my male counterparts, that wasn't necessarily the case. You've kind of always been encouraged to be on the golf course or, you know, in the locker room or having fun, going out and also professionally successful. So to me that, you know, that was kind of something that's always been in the back of my mind, which is that relationship between women and fun being healthy and happy and encouraged.
Yeah.
So that's part of our brand for sure is, you know, embracing your quirks, celebrating yourself, owning your fun really is what we like to say. And again, not in an angry way.
Yeah.
There's not that much that's angry about fun really, or rosé. It's just not an angry thing.
Maybe if you've had too much of it.
Yeah.
And you're coming from an angry perspective. Yeah. You're starting there.
Yeah,
right?
Fair enough.
I also found compelling how, and I've heard parts of your story before, mm-hmm. right? So this is exciting for me, right? But like you had all the money in the world and, you know, you just like it, the money was there and then you did the wine and stuff, right? I'm teasing
no,
you.
No, yeah. I was like, what are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah. But your story, right? I think that I'd love for you to share,
the
you know,
fundraising.
How you got started and especially, right, because you went for it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about going for it because I think especially for entrepreneurs listening to the podcast, but also there's a lot of people who want to become entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all these limitations, I think, that we put on ourselves that may or may not actually be real. And I find you, like, you've, like, busted down the door with that. So
yeah.
That story is pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, I was in grad school, so there in and of itself, there was no money left. And I'd had health issues, which were expensive to say the very least. And I had a 401k that my mentor who, when I was in college, who now happens to be my CFO, which is hilarious, told me when you go into the workforce, do anything you can to max out your 401k. And I just blindly followed yeah. her advice for a year. So I had a small amount of money in a retirement account. And when I decided to go for it, I knew I needed a prototype of the products because nobody would even really talk to me if they couldn't taste the wine, right?
Yeah.
Or they couldn't taste the actual end product. So I pulled my 401k, terrified my parents, as I'm sure you can imagine, and my friends. And I pulled my 401k and I bought 300 gallons of rosé wine and made a prototype. And then I just, you know, I get asked this a lot in terms of from other entrepreneurs or people wanting to start businesses? What do I do and where do I start? And I guess my answer has always been the same, is put yourself in a position where the only way out is through.
Yeah.
And for me, I laid it all on the line, and, you know, and things are going great so far, but it still could have been a huge,
right,
you know, crazy thing to do. I mean, time will tell, but, for some people that's having a co-founder that they cannot let down, or for mm-hmm. other people it's, taking a risk that they weren't sure they were going to take, or, you know, and for me it was, there was no other option. I was going to, I had to make it, or I was going to have to go with my tail between my legs to my parents' basement. So that's kind of the thing that I tell people a lot of the time, if that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, so after getting that prototype or those prototypes, I realized that obviously I needed funding. And we're talking at this point, like $12 in my bank account, thought I was going to have to give up, you know, panic attacks in the middle of the night, crying on a street corner at 4 a.m. in San Francisco, you know, not sure I'll be able to get an Uber because there's enough cash left in my account type of thing. You know, it was not easy by any stretch of the imagination. But basically what I did was I took that product that I'd raised money for, and I found some people who I thought could be cool angel investors. And I found them, you know, mostly through my network and my time in Silicon Valley and stuff like that. I kind of knew who some of them were. And I just really creepily figured out what parties they were going to and flooded those parties with product. And then a few days later, I'd either get an intro or reach out myself and be like, oh, you know, I have this cool little rosé company. And they'd say, oh my gosh, that's so crazy. I was just at this party where people were drinking that like nuts. And I would be like, oh my God, how did that happen? Like, who'd have thought it? That's so weird.
Yeah.
Not weird. Totally me. So, so that's kind of how I raised the first little chunk. Amazing. Crazily enough.
Yeah. Amazing. Thoughtful guerrilla marketing.
Yeah,
so, like, can you give us can you give us any hint of what is next in that, like, similar
in the guerrilla marketing tactics?
Yeah.
Well, sure. I mean,
because you have a big launch coming up, right?
Yeah, we do. We are direct to consumer online, so you can buy us in California on our website, and it'll show up the next day.
And your website again?
Drinkbev.com.
Yep.
And that's, which is very exciting and a little bit terrifying. I'm sure tons of things will break, including we had our first test order placed and then immediately got shut down by Shopify because we're selling alcohol and they needed proof that we could do it. So I'm really glad that we tested. whatever can go wrong will go wrong. But yeah, we're really excited. And I, you know, in terms of marketing, and things coming up, I mean, we've been really lucky in that we've really started to build a community around the message, right? And we have events a lot. We have parties. We have a cool, really cool spot in Venice with a rooftop. So, you know, the summer should be pretty bumping at, we call it the Bev House. so should be pretty bumping at the Bev House. And, you know, if you follow us on Drink Bev on Instagram, you can find out about a lot of stuff is going on. But yeah, so we're really trying to get people excited about what we care about more so than mm-hmm. try to push our product. Because my theory is, our mission is to build a world where people have more fun because they're kind, confident, and happy. So, you know, that is what we care about the most. And we figure that the rest will come. And we have a good product. We stand behind it. People love it. It's cute as well. It's fun. It's made by chicks, which is one of our sort of
and is on
lines.
The packaging.
It literally says made by chicks on the can.
Yeah.
You know, and which dudes love too, which we love.
Yeah.
But you know, but it's something that we want people aligned with our mission and drinking our products because they love what we stand for, rather than just trying to push it to the shelves. We're not it's not really our style.
So, and will you have a retail distribution strategy as well? Or is it direct to consumer to start? Or
it's direct to consumer to start. And we will go into retail eventually. Mm-hmm. We actually are going to be in a couple, you know, mom and pop retail shops, but we've actually asked them not to shelve it. So you kind of have to know where to find it. Little Bev treasure hunt in and around the area.
In Venice and Santa Monica?
In Venice and Santa Monica.
Can you give folks like one little hint to go on that treasure hunt or anything?
Yeah. We're really into Rose Avenue where our office is, like Rose. So in and around that area, you can find us.
I know a little spot next to Moon Juice.
Yeah, might be. But for the most part, we are direct to consumer online. And
sorry, I shouldn't be hunting for
it's
now.
Okay.
I'm like, I'm already there.
It's okay. Don't worry, Brian. We'll get you a six pack. It's fine. And it'll be online and then in on premise. So, you know, we're going to bars and places, and we're really being particular about where we want to sell into because we want those places to be really female friendly, you know, and places that are on brand for us. Like, we're not looking to sell into, you know, the club that turns half its people away for not wearing a skirt that's short enough.
The alley,
you know? No way. Right. Yeah. So for us, it's, we want places that vibe with what we stand for. And obviously there are some use cases like poolside is huge. mini bars, I'm sure at cool hotels and stuff like that is cool. But it's funny. One of my advisors recently told me, strategy is all about what you don't do.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting because especially when you're a young startup and money's always tight and, you know, it's always tempting to jump on that thing that, you know, that's offering you cash for a big account or something like that. But, you know, when you're so early, it's about saying no to those things that are tempting that will build your brand and build that loyalty. And so we're finding that definitely to be true and to be really helpful advice.
Yeah, that's great. So on the, if we go into fundraising a little bit, is there anything in particular you've noticed, raising as a woman, is that, has that gotten easier over the last, you're a bit less than a year old?
We're less than a year old,
but have raised two rounds now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. so talk to us a little bit about that process. Cause I think, you know, like it's changing, but not nearly fast enough.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. And, you know, I got lucky. I got really lucky.
You create your own luck, Alix.
Yeah. My grandfather actually always used to say, it's one of my favorite things, luck falls on the shoulders of those prepared to receive it.
Yes.
Which I think is true to an extent. I think, you know, I think I've been particularly lucky. I've also hunted for a fair amount of, you know, of those opportunities as well. Right. But I really did get lucky and in the sense that I had people in San Francisco who were entrepreneurs, men, all men, who went out of their way to really help me understand how to do this. And I think one of the things that I learned or noticed pretty quickly was that, you know, for most of these friends of mine who were helpful in teaching me the ropes a little bit, I was pretty much their only true female friend. They just don't have that many female friends, or at least not female entrepreneur friends, in the groups I kind of ran in when I was living there. And, you know, I have a bunch of brothers. I've kind of always grown up being, you know, the chick in the group, if you will, of guys, you know, male dominated jobs over and over again. I've kind of gotten used to that. But a lot of women haven't, and a lot of women don't have that. And what I noticed was that a lot of men and male entrepreneurs have one another, and they share investors, they share deal flow. There's kind of a web that's hard to get into, but once you're in it, you know, it's pretty. There's a lot of access, right? And you meet a lot of people, and the network starts to grow and things like that. And what I've noticed is that for women, it's just harder because first of all, there just aren't number-wise as many, and there aren't as many women who have started companies and exited them. I mean, even some of the biggest, you know, startups that are female-led right now, they still haven't exited. They're still growing. And so there just aren't that many people, especially who invest at the very, very early stages. And in San Francisco, I found that most of the angel investors for seed companies are former entrepreneurs themselves.
Yep.
And so there just hasn't been enough exits for there to be that kind of network for women yet.
Yeah.
So I try to do my best to help as many female entrepreneurs as I can just learn the ropes and get the mentorship and the help and the introductions that I was really, really lucky to receive. Mm-hmm. I just think the network is smaller or non-existent in a lot of cases, and it's just harder to break in. And once you kind of have the hang of it, once you've gotten funding, as a female, I feel like people tend to rally behind you. It's almost like harder to get at first and then a little bit easier momentum wise.
Uh-huh.
If that's not sacrosanct to say.
Sure. Well, it's truth, right?
So, I feel like once you've kind of proven that you can break through that first barrier as a female entrepreneur, mm-hmm. things tend to fall into place a little bit more. I've heard that mm-hmm. from a couple of my female friends, but, mm-hmm. But it's a lot harder to break through.
Yeah.
It was also interesting because, I went through this interesting transition with a lot of these friends, in and around Silicon Valley, where I went from their friend who was a female to very much a peer, mm-hmm. professionally, and someone who shared investors and, you know, another entrepreneur and stuff like that. And it was just an interesting transition, honestly.
Yeah.
It was definitely a transition of sorts. And once I'd sort of proven that I could do that first thing, I found a lot more access to a lot more support very quickly.
Yeah.
But some of those same people who, while I was struggling, were kind of waiting to see if I could do it, had very different mentalities after the first little tranche of funding than they did before, if that makes sense. And I think that I've heard that from a lot of friends.
That's always fun as an entrepreneur when people come back to you.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. That's
a special little moment. And so for people who want to learn about the parties, find Drink Bev, just once again, if you can share where people can find you online.
Yeah. It's at Drink Bev on Instagram. That's kind of where we're most active, and you can find out the most about what's going on. And then also sign up for our newsletter on drinkbev.com. You'll find loads of pop-ups telling you to sign up for our newsletter. So you can find stuff out there as well.
Amazing. Well, Alix, this has been a great conversation. Really excited to see your success. And I know we're just starting. And it's been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Women in Tech is an independently funded project funded by you, the community. So the way that you could support us is by going to patreon.com/womenintech and making a small contribution. Every little bit counts. That's Patreon, patreon.com/womenintech. Thank you so much for believing in our vision.